Yeah.
Okay.
And to be so we're clear in our hand signals. This is wrap it up. This is talk around the table more.
Yeah.
All right.
This is wrap it up. Oh God.
That's not good. Anyway. That's
confusing. Hello and welcome to Jesuitical, a new podcast from the Mad Young, Wicked Hip, and Toad Slay editors of American Media. That lay part means we aren't Jesuits, but we work with them. Join us each week for a smart Catholic take on faith, culture, and the news, often over drinks. I am Ashley McKinless, joined with Zach Davis.
The Q is silent. It trips people up sometimes.
Stop it. We're not going to get into this.
And Olga Segura.
Hi, guys.
Oh, all right. How are you guys doing?
Pretty good. I really enjoyed your totes.
Yeah.
So shout out to Sarah E. Neville for the adverbs this week.
Yes.
As a part of our ongoing efforts to do as little work as possible on this podcast. Requested.
We have outsourced
our adverbs. So thank you to
Sarah
for sending in some totes great ones.
Yeah. And we also outsourced our cocktail this week. So what do we have on tap, Zach?
Yeah, speaking of, let's get these distributed. Olga, thanks for playing bartender this week.
Yeah, I hope you guys like it.
We're getting closer to summer and the drinks are getting
already have one. That's nice.
That's why I put ice in it. I wanted to fool you guys into thinking it was summer already.
Alrighty. So Jake wrote in that with Pontifex at Pontifex, this is on Twitter, naming new cardinals, try a Negroni this week. Equal parts gin, sweet vermouth, and Campari. And the cardinal thing is that the drink is red because Campari is red. So #red hat, #red drink. So thanks,
good call, Jake.
Thank you.
Yeah. So well, cheers to the new cardinals.
Yeah.
The to be cardinals,
well,
right?
The to be cardinals, yeah.
Yeah. We'll talk about them later, but cheers.
Cheers. Today we've got Rabbi Avram Lotek, who's the co-founder of BASE, which is a project that seeks to create communities focused on hospitality, learning, and services. And then we've got our Consolations and Desolations, where we show you where we did or didn't find God this week.
But first, Signs of the Times, the part of our show where we sift through the Catholic news of the week so you don't have to. Starting with a quick update, 3 weeks ago, we brought a story about the uncertain fate of 50,000 Haitians living in the U.S. under temporary protected status. These are people who left Haiti after the earthquake in 2010 and have been able to live here. President Trump had until May 24th to decide whether to extend that status or not. And on Monday, he extended that status for another 6 months. Usually the status has been extended for 18 months at a time. So it's not completely settled at this point, but, that's good news.
Amen. What's our next story?
By the way,
I was going to ask you, I heard that Simone Biles ate breakfast this week.
Oh, I was about to say we're getting into the part of our show where Ashley brings news that Zach doesn't think is news.
Should we report on that since she prays sometimes or is Catholic and
Zach,
won a gold medal?
She has gold medals. So.
Right. So.
Lots of gold medals. No, but in other Catholic pop celebrity news. Rachel Lindsay is the first African-American bachelorette in it's like over 20 seasons of Bachelor and Bachelorette. And she is a graduate of Marquette University Law School. So, yeah.
And it's the greatest threat to the sanctity of marriage today. The Bachelor.
All right. It like literally lifts up marriage as the greatest thing that you could ever strive for.
That's insane.
I've never watched The Bachelorette, but if that's the message, Ashley, I'll start.
Okay, you should. And Rachel is actually, I've only been watching for like 3 seasons. My roommate turned me on to it, but Rachel is super legit and smart and kind. And
she'll be dating 20 people at the same time and then casually throwing them away as the season progresses.
Good luck, Rachel. On Sunday, some 100 students at Notre Dame walked out during the commencement speech of Vice President Mike Pence. They were doing this to protest his stances on things like immigration, Syrian refugees, LGBT issues. So what do you guys think? A legit protest or campus snowflakes?
Well, of course it's a legit protest. They were respectful. They didn't try to shout him down or shut down his speech. They were just exercising their own speech, right? So they coordinated with the campus safety saying, we're going to leave, just so you know. where we'll be quiet, we'll be respectful. So I don't know how you can say that that's shutting down someone else's speech.
And they were also super respectful of the people who chose to stay. So I think it is a very legitimate thing to do. And it's not easy to just walk out and protest.
Yeah, especially when you've got your parents and grandparents coming in town. I mean, I remember when I was in high school, my mom told me, like, if you do a senior prank and you get caught and you're not allowed to walk, I will kill you.
Well.
Because that day's not about you.
Right. It's about your family.
It's about your family. I want my photo. So. They were also missing out on the speaker after Mike Pence, which was Father Greg Boyle, the great Jesuit who founded Homeboy Industries.
Yeah, I got to interview him on the radio show today at Sirius. Yeah, and we asked him if he got a chance to talk to Vice President Pence, and he said yes. And he, evidently, people in Pence's family read Greg Boyle's book, and he said, "My family loves you." And also revealed that Mike Pence's nephew is a Jesuit volunteer at Homeboy Industries.
Wow.
Who knew?
Okay.
That's crazy.
Yeah, but if you get a chance to watch, I mean, it's anything that Greg Boyle does, whether it's a TED Talk, an article.
An interview with Zach Davis.
but his speech, you know, it's a bummer. I commend those people for walking out, but the fact that they had to miss Greg Boyle's address was sad. It's a good one.
All right. What's our next story, Zach?
Pope Francis surprised some people over the weekend by announcing that a new consistory, which is a fancy Catholic word for saying the Pope's going to create 5 new cardinals, 2 Europeans, 1 from Spain, 1 from Sweden. Well, the other 3 are coming from Mali, Laos, and Latin America.
And this kind of continues Pope Francis's move, shifting the College of Cardinals away from being very Eurocentric, which has been a theme of his papacy. So 3 out of 5 of these have never had a cardinal before. And the choice from El Salvador, Rosa Chavez, was a good friend of Blessed Oscar Romero, who has, under Pope Francis, gotten a retrieval. He was kind of a persona non grata for a while, because of his connection to liberation theology. Raising Rosa Chavez as a cardinal is a signal of the kind of church Pope Francis wants.
That's right.
What's next, Olga?
So today, the meeting that many people have been anxiously or excitedly awaiting, Pope Francis and Trump have finally met at the Vatican. So today, we are recording on Wednesday, May 24th, and they met today. And it started off, you know, our Rome correspondent wrote a piece and he described it as sort of starting off very tense. But it got a lot friendlier. Pope Francis, as is expected, talked about peace and the need to sort of engage in interreligious dialogue, which many people saw as like really inspiring and hopefully, you know, will inspire Trump to kind of follow in Pope Francis's example.
Well, the president's last 3 tweets after he met with the Pope all contain the word peace.
Wow.
And 2 of them, the word was in all caps, in fact, to show emphasis. So
that's hopeful.
Yeah, the president was thinking about peace going into the meeting and left. Well, the Pope gave President Trump a copy of his encyclicals, which he typically does to heads of state. But also he personally wrote a note inside of his World Day of Peace message for 2017. So God only knows what he wrote there. But also, like, it's, I just pray that it actually works, because Trump just got back from making a $100 billion arms sale to Saudi Arabia. There's Saber.
But he also is coming off a trip to Israel and Palestine, in which peace was a central part of that agenda. He really was trying to bring both sides together for peace in the Middle East.
Was trying, so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you whether he's successful. But, you know, he's already dropped the mother of all bombs. Fired Tomahawk missiles, and they're saber-rattling with North Korea almost like twice a week now. Mm-hmm. So I'm praying that he comes away with a strong message of peace.
So in the Wall Street Journal, William McGurn makes this seemingly perennial, like, Pope Francis and Trump are the same argument, that they're both very good at insulting people they disagree with. President Trump, you know, had all of his nicknames, low energy Jeb, Little Marco. I don't know how he'd said all these.
Little Marco,
Crooked Hillary, and
Crazy Bernie.
Yeah. And I guess Pope Francis is also good at insults. He calls people, he goes to the example of Pope Francis saying building walls is not Christian, as if that's on the same level as Crooked Hillary or Lion Ted. But I will say, I think there are like smarter versions of this argument where they are both kind of populist figures who came into establishments with the intention of shaking up those establishments and doing so in a way that might be unsettling to people who were comfortable how things were. And they both are probably the most high-profile critics of the neoliberal world order right now. Like, they come at it from very different places, but I think they would both have, you know, strong critiques of the Davos set and free trade at the expense of people.
I think that's Pope Francis's concern. I think the president is concerned at the expense of profit.
Yeah.
And also, I think...
That's what he ran on.
There's a difference between being a populist and being popular, right? A populist is someone who looks at someone's fears and their insecurities about their economic situation and says, only I can fix this. I'm going to make it better, and exploits that fear. Whereas you have someone like Pope Francis who is constantly filling people with hope. And it's not something that the Pope isn't saying like, listen to me and I'll make it better. The Pope is primarily just listening.
Yeah.
So I think that's the difference.
Trump instills fear in people, and whereas Pope Francis makes us super hopeful. So I side with Zach on this one. I think these hot takes are...
They're hot takes.
They're cold takes. And I'll just challenge... That face when your joke doesn't land.
They're flat.
Cold takes and flat jokes.
And now we are joined by Rabbi Avram. Thanks for coming.
Cheers. Happy to be here.
Yeah. Okay. So we're going to start with some very basics because this is a Catholic podcast. So rabbis, what do they do? Are priests the Catholic version of rabbis? Are they different? What do you do?
Like X-Men, we are creatures that come to life. Certain type of mutant powers. Rabbi is Hebrew for teacher.
Okay.
So that at its core, that's what a rabbi is, but also refers to a certain type of religious training and proficiency in Jewish text and some type of pastoral skills, I guess.
Too. Yeah.
So you are a teacher, and you are the co-founder of this group called BASE, or a group project. How would you describe it?
Yes. And yes, when I finished rabbinical school about 2.5 years ago, and my partner and I, Yael, and our dear friends who are out in Brooklyn now, John and Faith, we came up with this project called BASE. And the idea is to empower pluralistic rabbinic couples. That means a rabbi and a rabbi's partner, but the couple could be queer, straight, Orthodox, conservative, Reform, those are different Jewish denominations, but to empower their homes as convening points for Jewish life. So we gather around three main pillars celebrating the Jewish calendar. So we celebrate Shabbat and holidays together, different learning opportunities, and community service. Those are the three main pillars, but how it'll look will depend on the personalities of the couple. And the idea really came from, you know, young people aren't necessarily running to houses of worship, or at least synagogues. I don't know how y'all are doing. But are still seeking community and meaning and learning and intentionality. So this was a way of sort of stripping the rabbis of their pulpits and sort of getting into the pews. And it's all out of our home. So
what's like an average get together? How many people are coming? What are their ages?
You got to come. Are you free this Saturday? Come for Shabbat lunch.
Okay.
You're welcome to join us. Or Friday night dinner. It's all different types of folks.
Yeah.
You know, it's single folks who are partnered with Jewish partners or non-Jewish partners, Jews of color, queer Jews, Orthodox refugees, as I'll call them, people who come from, say, more traditional or Orthodox backgrounds but have since left and are still seeking community. So all different types of people.
Non-Jews?
Yes.
So what has your work with BASE taught you about the role of religion in the lives of millennials specifically?
I think people sort of assume that millennials are like a checked out group of people, you know, they like wait for things to come to them. But I think if anything that BASE has taught us is just how thirsty people are for connection.
So you said earlier that people aren't going to synagogues. Is there like an underlying goal to get people going to synagogue?
Yes. What's our secret?
Yeah, that's what I want to say. Yeah. Yeah.
No, it's fair. I don't know. Have you heard of Chabad?
I've not.
They're like they're an ultra Orthodox. They're a sect of ultra Orthodox Jews. You might see them around Union Square or Times Square, asking people if they're Jewish.
And I've been asked if I was Jewish before,
and you've answered.
No, I feel like,
you should see what happens. They bring you into.
I didn't mean to let you down. I'm sorry.
No, right. So you know they're a of ultra Orthodox. Tend to be a pretty insular group, but of the sects, and there are many, they're known for their, let's say, outgoingness, which some might understand as...
Evangelical Jews?
Yeah, or like a type of missionizing. They ask people if they're Jews, and if they answer yes, they'll invite them to lay phylacteries, which is part of like a daily worship traditionally for men, or they'll give out candles for people to light for Friday night to welcome in the Sabbath. Chabad is known for its radical inclusivity, and also it's like agenda. And so for us, like we felt it shouldn't only be the Jewish fundamentalists who can exhibit radical hospitality, but the people who are teaching or opening up their homes should sort of reflect the diversity of where the Jewish people are at too. So no real secret agenda, or at least that we've yet uncovered. I mean,
sure. Yeah. Who knows?
We believe in what we're doing. You know, we believe that living the Jewish calendar has something to offer, that there's, you know, in learning and community service. But outside of that,
are you tuned in at all to the conversation that's happening in the Christian world over the Benedict option? It's this idea that like Western civilization is like lost, Christianity is like going to be persecuted, targeted. We need to build a new ark to like for everyone to hop on so that we can save the church. That's a very
where are you guys
like,
gonna go? Like Utah, or
we're gonna wait out
Mars,
Jerusalem? The storm until
will Jerusalem take us?
I don't know.
No, but the basic idea is that like Christians, if they want their kids to be Christians, or Jews, if they want their kids to be Jews, they need to be very intentional about passing on that faith because right. They are in a hostile environment.
Sure.
So does that resonate at all to you?
Yeah, I mean, depends who you ask, but I grew up in a unique home. My mom comes from like a modern Orthodox background, which is very traditional. My dad comes from a very secular background. I grew up speaking Yiddish, which usually you're only going to find like young people who speak Yiddish today if they grow up living in those ultra Orthodox communities, which and I didn't. But I mean that fear of, you know, annihilation or persecution or assimilation or losing our identity, of course. I mean, one could point to our history and say, well, there's some precedent there. but that's not enough to inspire like religious affiliation or connection.
It doesn't sound like your community is driven by fear.
I mean, I might not be. I strive not to be, but if you were going to look at the establishment, quote unquote, I mean, definitely.
Yeah.
Jews are dying out. Jews are marrying non-Jews. Jews aren't going to synagogue and affiliating in traditional ways. So I think you definitely have that type of fear. The question is like, what do you do?
Yeah. How do you respond?
How do you respond to that?
Yeah.
And that's and your one answer, right? You're trying to come up with one answer. What are some of the other answers?
Oh, I mean,
tell us all the dumb ones.
No, I mean, like, you retreat in. Like, I think we're trying to hold a posture that's a delicate dance and balance of, you know, it's what open orthodoxy, I think, strives to be, which is committed to the religion, committed to a certain set core beliefs and practices, but also with a posture of radical inclusivity and openness to the outside world. But yeah, I think people generally will like retreat in and become insular and push away what's new or they'll go all out and maybe they'll sort of water down a little bit of where they've come from.
Can you talk a little bit more about would you consider interfaith work central or part of or?
Definitely. I mean, interfaith is such an interesting word. It reeks of like this religious science fiction premise where you've got like these like interspecies, you know, like
animorphs.
Yeah.
I don't know what.
But listen, how old do you have to be to know what that means. My maternal great grandfather, after whom I'm named, you know, he fled Eastern Europe to flee pogroms, you know, these state sponsored attacks against Jewish communities, and he came here as a teen, and you know, he had three kids, and when his daughter married a non-Jew, he wrote her off. He sat Shiva, which is a mourning period, and he, you know, he wasn't in contact with her. I mean, she would write home letters, but, you know, again, how do we...
Interfaith work.
Interfaith work, yeah. It's a slippery slope, man. But, like, that's not where we live today, right? Like, the United States president's daughter, it's common knowledge, has converted through, like, an Orthodox rabbinical court, and, like, from John Stewart to Adam Sandler, like, Jews wear their Jewish star with a certain type of pride, you know? So, of course, like, interfaith work, whatever that means, is central to my work, because I don't think you can really be a rabbi in today's day and age and not cater to the community, and the community is rapidly changing. This trip that I just came back from.
Speaking of, were you there when the president was there?
No, we just overlapped. Ah. We waved to each other. Yeah. Or... extended other, like, you know, hand gestures to each other. And
we won't say who was.
That's exactly right. Yeah. We've got a whole history there, you know. But, you know, I was there on a trip called Honeymoon Israel, which brings recently married couples or couples that are in a committed relationship to Israel for about 10-day trip, highly subsidized trip. They pay something, but, and it's mostly interfaith couples, so couples with at least one Jewish partner. And introducing them to Judaism. Each trip has a Jewish educator that comes, that is part of it. They're a great organization, you know.
Why don't Catholics do that? Like,
there were mad Catholics on our trip.
Were there?
Okay. Oh, of course. Yeah. One of who's a parishioner at St. Francis and is hopefully going to join our spiritual readings group.
So this is a question we present to all of our guests. If you could canonize anyone...
Whatever the Jewish version of that is, it could be
a Christian, a Jew. It doesn't. It could be someone completely secular. Okay. Like, we've had Disney characters. So.
Say more about canonization.
Yeah.
Who do you want to hold up as a model to be emulated?
I mean, right now I'm longing for John Stewart. He is someone who speaks his truth, who strives to empower different people, who's a political leader who's somewhat tied into his own, I think strongly tied into his roots and where he comes from, and has a Torah, we'll say, a teaching that resonates quite deeply, I think.
Yeah, I really wish I had his commentary at this point in our nation's history.
John Stewart's like commentary on the Bible or
that
the gospel
also,
or
and the presidency. Yeah. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, Avram.
Pleasure.
Great.
Thanks for having me, guys.
So I can crash one of your scripture parties?
No crashing. You're invited.
Excellent.
Join us whenever.
Where can people find out more about your work?
BaseHillel.org.
Awesome.
Okay, time for listener feedback. Zach, what do we have?
So our first letter or email.
That was aggressive.
Our first email comes from Courtney on confession. She writes, could you please do a show on reconciliation? Maybe it would be called Reconciliation or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Sacrament or Reconciliation. It's not just for murderers and bank robbers.
This is a great idea, Courtney. Yeah.
She writes, seriously, confession has been one of the greatest struggles in my faith life. I've never heard it discussed in a real and casual way. The two ways that it's typically discussed that she brings up are cricket noises, like no one goes, no one talks about it, or it's all guilt all the time. In my mind, this view is much worse. Sadly, Catholic message boards perpetuate this in a rather horrid manner. Examination of conscience can turn into, did you watch a documentary that positively portrayed Martin Luther? Did you lustfully look at a hamburger on a Lenten Friday? did you participate in a jousting competition? For which she provides a link to a message board, which someone is questioning.
Oh my God.
Some pope somewhere down the line said jousting was a sin, and they went, and they... So it's not the most healthy of practices.
Yeah.
Stay off the message boards. Come to our Twitter feed.
And also listen to our first episode in which we talked to Father James Martin about confession.
Yeah. So this is something people bring up a lot. So I imagine we're not done talking about it. But yeah, that first episode, Jim brings up a great point where he says, you know, a lot of people stop going to confession because they had a really bad experience. Mm-hmm. And he makes a point. If you had a bad experience with a physician, would you never see a doctor again?
Right.
So yeah, check out episode one. It was our pilot.
I did have a bad experience with a dentist and I stopped going for like 5 years. Yeah.
So.
And was worse off for it. So
right.
Go to confession. Okay, now it's time for Consolations and Desolations, the part of the show where we talk about where we found God this week and where it was harder to find God this week. And we're going to invite Avram to jump in on this if he so chooses.
Should we go first? I feel like we should model.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Model. Yeah. Yeah. All right, Zach, what's your consolation or desolation?
So Ashley introduced me to this concept of the, are we calling them hangover parishes?
I called it an after party parish.
After party.
You called it that.
Okay. An after party parish. Right. So this is the one that's across the street from your apartment. I just moved, so I checked out the one. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful church. So I went there, and to my surprise, it was First Communion, which, you know, on the one hand, you can be like, oh, Mass is going to be longer than I thought. But also, like, it's all these cute kids in white dresses and suits, and it's great. And the thing that consoled me this week was they got up to do their First Communion song at the end, and they sang a song that I used to sing when I was in high school in my youth group. So they did the "Open the Eyes of My Heart, Lord."
There we go.
Open the eyes of my heart.
He only did this to sing.
I want to see you. So imagine that, but a bunch of 7-year-olds, like in the most adorable way. So I find myself tearing up just like watching this happen and feeling connected to a community. And relationships that I had at a previous point in my life. And so that was consoling for me this week.
Can I tell my hangover church story?
Absolutely.
So this
is that what the segment is called?
Hangover
church moment?
Pretty much.
This Sunday, I was back home in Arlington, and the only Mass I could get myself to was the 1:30 Spanish Mass at like a random parish in Arlington.
You speak some Spanish.
I do. Yeah. No. So I got all the important parts. But at this random parish were the relics of Saint Padre Pio.
Look at that.
I was like, wow. So it paid off.
Yeah. But that's not your consolation or your desolation.
No, it's not. But it's related.
Okay. Tell me.
Because the reason I was back in Arlington, was for my sister's 30th birthday party. Which was really great. And even better than the fact that it was her 30th. Well, no, that was the best part, but it was also great that my laptop has been broken for the past 2 weeks. So I couldn't do any work. Over the weekend, I could be completely present to my sister and to my family, and that was really, really nice. And I actually took like an extra day off. Like I took Monday off, which
that's just one day off. That's not any extra days.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. Ashley is a workaholic, and she works really hard. So to know that she actually took a day off, like that was actually
a day off where I actually wasn't on my laptop secretly working from home.
Yeah, and you didn't respond to any of my emails. It really put a cramp in my day.
Yeah. No, but I'm glad you were able to be present with your family and you took a well-deserved day off.
I did.
Shout out to me and Eloise for having to like convince you into doing that.
Yeah. No. And also shout out to Jackie for being 30. She like came out of the womb at age 30, so she's really like in her own now. She can just like wear cardigans and pearl earrings and feel very like at peace with herself. And shout out to her husband Justin, who threw a great surprise party.
So if you have a desolation, you can jump in and
Mine's complicated. I'm still working through it.
Okay.
There are moments of godliness and also moments of real...
It's okay, because we work through it every single week.
Okay, cool. So I just came back from this trip where with 20 or so couples recently married, a bunch of whom were married to non-Jewish partners. And so one of them asked to sit with me, and she's talking a bit about her own family background. She married a non-Jewish man and a man of Indian descent. And when she grew up quite traditional and religious, and when she told her family that she was going to marry this man, they, after one or two email follow-ups, they have ceased all communication. They weren't at her wedding. They haven't been in touch with her since then. And it's been pretty heartbreaking for her to not have her family meet this new part of her life, who she loves and who she feels, she said that she feels like God has brought into her life. And so here we were sitting together in Jerusalem, this complicated city of multi-faith traditions, and wondering if there's a place for her still within Judaism. So there was a moment, I guess there's a moment of desolation there, of heartbreak of that she feels, and the brokenness in her own family dynamic, where her parents don't, at least at this moment in time, don't necessarily want to have a place in her life. But what's the other one? Consolation.
Yeah.
But there was also something so inspiring about her being there with her partner and wanting to know.
Making an effort, yeah.
Yeah, just want to, the basic question of whether or not there is a place for her, to which we have to say, resounding yes. There's a teaching in the Talmud, Rachmana Libabai, that the merciful one requires or requests or demands the heart. That's what God wants. So there's something quite powerful about seeing her there in her full, in her most vulnerable self, but still seeking. Or wondering if God or Judaism might have some resonance still for her.
Yeah. Right. That's beautiful.
Yeah, you're putting our desolation to shame. You're really good at this.
Yeah. Are you sure it's your first time doing this?
Consolation, desolation. Yeah. I love it. I'm going to bring it to our Shabbat table.
That's great. All right. What about you, Olga?
So my consolation this week is that in the past, I've talked with you guys about how difficult it is for me to sort of talk about my faith life. But I decided that this week I was going to be a little more intentional about it and sort of step outside of the America circles and talk to my friends about it. So I had a conversation with one of my best friends, and I was asking her, what's your relationship with God? We've never talked about it. And she's just like, I have a very personal relationship with God. And we talked for hours. I was just like, okay, this is not as terrifying as I thought it was, and it was super consoling to know that this sort of illogical fear that I had about having this conversation was completely unfounded, because my friend was super open and super vulnerable with me about the whole thing. So it was really beautiful.
That's awesome. And that's not an easy thing, a topic to broach a lot of the time.
Right.
So the fact that you did that, kudos to you. And now our listeners, I'm sure, can think of this person, right, who they want to talk to this about. Now you have a segue. I was listening to this dope podcast.
There it is.
And someone talked about how they brought this up with a friend. What do you think?
Yeah.
So follow Olga's lead if you're feeling, shoot your shot, right?
Yeah. Pull up from 40, guys. Yeah. You got this.
Or just steal their phone and download Judge Whitcomb for them.
Also that.
That works too. I mean.
And then they'll bring it to you. You won't even have to. Okay. Judgmental is brought to you by American Media and produced by Wyatt Massey and Eloise Blondiot. Our editor is Noah Levinson. Jesuit formation provided by Eric Sundrup SJ. Jewish formation provided by Rabbi Avram Lotek. Lotek?
Turn it!
Malotek! I knew there was an M. Adult supervision provided by Carrie Weber. Research help from Jack McCordick. Adverbs provided by Sarah E. Neville. Our logo is by Sean Tripoli. You can follow us on Twitter at Judgmental Show and send us your questions, feedback, cocktail recipes, and tell us where you found God this week at judgmental@americanmedia.org. I am Ashley McKinless with Zach Davis and Olga Segura. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.